It's huge.
It is huge, yeah. I pulled it out and looked at it, and I was very uninspired by it.
Hello, and welcome back.
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
I am Malcolm Childs.
And I'm James Skiffins, and we're Just Making Conversation,
where we discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measure.
From the greasy sprues to the gloss coats and everything in between, we are going to be just making conversation.
Remember, there are other... Sorry.
Remember, there are other podcasts you can listen to.
Better podcasts. Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
The Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
And not forgetting Build Sideways. Head to modelpodcast.com for all the links.
If you have enjoyed our podcast, consider leaving a review or 5 stars.
Showing your support to us is as easy as making a coffee. In fact, why not go over to buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast and do just that. Your support will help go towards making the podcast just a little bit better. In this episode, we'll just be making conversation about modelling stashes, the purchases for future builds, impulse buys, or just because you can.
Let's face it, those shiny new kits are a must-have because you've been waiting forever for that subject. Or is it because at that price, you just can't help yourself?
Why do we feel the need to buy more kits than we will ever build in our lifetime? What will retirement look like with all the plastic to build? Or do you worry when that dreaded retirement looms, you will have not enough money to buy kits? When is it time to stop buying them?
Hey, James.
Hey, buddy, you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. What are you up to?
Ah, relaxing with a cup of coffee.
Nice. Have you got time for a chat?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Have you got about an hour-ish?
So let's kick off with any feedback and comments we've had.
Yay. Okay. Yes, we've had some positive stuff. We don't read the negatives. Otherwise, we'd be here all night. What comments did we have?
We've had Costa. Buy me a coffee. Bought some coffee. Thank you very much. I'm slurping as we talk. And he says, just finished listening to the Can of Worms episode. Thank you for discussing this. Yes, it was Costa's idea. So many truths spoken during the 60 minutes. Here's a much-deserved cup of coffee to go with your worms. Thank you for that.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, he's going to send us money for reading out his own ideas. That's great.
Yeah. Keep them coming.
Thank you, Costa. That's great. Other one from Tim. This is Tim and his cat, Sunkissed. He says, from worms to walnuts, we both like your latest podcast. Thank you very much, Tim. It's very nice, very kind.
One other comment we've had was from Ryan, actually on the Walnut Challenge group build page. And he said, the guys talked about my nuts in this episode. It's nice to know that one's nuts are on the lips of others. Oh, dude, that's so hard to...
It's not hard.
Give it a listen. Give it a listen and get your own nuts. It's an addictively simple challenge to build a diorama in a walnut shell. Well, thank you, Ryan. That is such a segue straight into the Walnut Challenge group build, strangely.
We got the jingle, haven't we, to play?
We have.
Yeah, so let's just play that. What's your update on your walnuts? How far have you got? Where have you got? What's happening? What's going on?
Walnut
challenge!
Yes, my nuts are half-shelled. I've bought some bits to go in my Dremel because I'm going to try and cut my nuts in a way in which I can keep the nut itself together but create some steps into the nut. And I'm going to leave it at that and make you all wonder what that on earth I'm talking about. And the nuts that I've halved, I have got to still muck around with and clean out and start applying myself. Yes. So, yeah, not a lot of progress from me, unfortunately, but there will be in the coming weeks, definitely.
You need to pay more attention to your nut work, basically.
Yes, I've neglected my nuts. Yeah, they're quite sad and yeah, wrinkly.
So, yeah, looking at this, looking at this group builder, this Facebook's gone crazy and mad, exploded all over the place. There's some fantastic stuff on there. I don't know if you want to talk about anything that's particularly leapt out of you recently.
No, I'm not going to, actually, because we're going to cover that in the next episode. But yeah, you're right. There is some amazing and inspiring, actually, builds. You know, things that this sounds really silly and simple, but, you know, Peter Brown, for example, that has just managed to get his nuts and display them on what I can only describe as like an egg tray, of which there are 11 nuts. There's one hole missing, which I'm not sure if that means he's lost one or he was fiddling with one. I don't know, but he says they're a decent size, so that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, just that in itself, and the sheer amount of people that are getting involved is just phenomenal.
Yes. Go and have a look. It's the Walnut Challenge group build on Facebook. Anyone can join.
I do have to say, though, our fellow podcasters, now some of them are members of the group build, but I've not seen any work towards making any. So I know the Nats are coming up and I know they're all gathering. We've been left out purely by our own circumstances. So we won't be with them, unfortunately. But please, I implore you. I know you listen to our podcast as much as we listen to yours. So give it a go. If I have to accept a challenge from you guys in return, then I'm more than happy to do so. Get your nuts out. Give them a whirl.
What's the model show they're all meeting at called?
At the Nats.
And the Nuts?
Not. Well, with my spelling, yes, it would be Nuts.
Anyone can get involved at all. It's a bit of fun.
I'm hoping. I mean, this has been running now for, we're actually the second month. It actually started on the 1st of May. Oh, there you go. I didn't think it was that far. So 1st of May it started. We set up the page early to give you plenty of warning. And it's, the end date is the 1st of August. So Malcolm's got some lovely rules that he's written. Just pay attention to the first couple of lines. We'll want you to fall outside the rules. It's all for fun anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all that people break the rules. Makes no difference whatsoever. They're still valid and handsome people. It's all fine.
If you join the page or you're a member of the group, you'll understand why Malcolm's making that statement. I'm not going to say it before. We're coming to the end of this part of the podcast. So what I really like is the fact that someone has gone out of their way and bought some nuts and are making more than one build. Yes, you do need a couple spare just in case you can't break the shell properly, but a lot of people are doing more than one entry, and it seems that once you've done one, you want to do more. So it's your hard work, guys. It really is truly inspiring. So, yeah, thank you.
There we go. There's your nut. Yes. Your nut update.
Nut update.
You are now up to date. Updates and nuts.
Oh, if you can involve dates in your nuts, good for you. Anyway, we're going to talk about stashes today.
We are. And that's kind of down to the new feature that we're going to be running, isn't it?
Stash or cash or...
What are we going to call it?
What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to put a poll up on the Facebook group asking you what you want to call this section. The premise of the section is basically we're going to select a couple of kits that's in our stash and we're going to talk about the kits and then we're going to decide whether we should put them back in the stash for posterity, for our retirement or whatever, or we're going to cash them in or maybe swap them out to something else, something along those lines. And what we're asking you guys to do is to write us in a message and tell us about some kits in which are in your stash that you don't know whether they hold on to or whether to find new owners for.
Yeah, so we'll discuss it openly, and we'll discuss what we would do ourselves if we had that kit and that dilemma. Maybe we can find a solution for you. You don't have to do what we say. Just
no, that's right. It's just an opinion. We'll open it up to the people on the Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
When we do a podcast where we've discussed certain kits, we'll put that up, and maybe we could do a poll to see what the majority of our listeners would do as well.
Yeah, maybe.
So, a little bit of way of interacting. And of course, you may have heard this in another podcast, but I can assure you, we've not stolen the idea. We have taken the idea on board with permission, and we're gonna see how it goes.
Do we adopt the idea? Maybe that's a good way of saying it.
I think that's exactly what we do. We're adopting the idea. It was a segment in the Scale Model Shed. Graham, Ivan, and Dan. Mm-hmm. Great podcast, and that was one of the things in which they did, and the listeners seemed to engage and enjoy it. So talking to the three of them, it's something in which sort of keen to see come back. Maybe
we'll see. I'll give it a go. A lot of people have said to me in person, they said, oh, it'd be good if you did stash or cash that Scale Model Shed. I think a lot of people enjoyed it, so we will try and put our own spin on it and bring some entertainment that way. Also give us a bit of content for us.
Yeah, absolutely. The topic is stashes. So I'm assuming you've got a stash, have you?
Yes, I do.
Goes with your beard?
That's a mustache.
Oh, sorry.
That bit is a mustache. Behind me, as I think you can see if I move my webcam, behind me is my overflow, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And in the garage is where most of my model kits are based, the garage. Not the best place because the boxes get squished and everything else, but kits inside are fine. I reckon I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and probably about a bit more in there. I probably have about 30 model kits, I'd say, in my stash. And probably about about five different types of figures, I would imagine, on the, because there's another little shelf a bit lower down. You see that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's got like accessory sets, and there's a jet bike from Elan 13, and then there's my bolt action stuff as well. So that won't be part of my stash. I guess my books as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've been collecting part of my stash. I don't know. But yeah, I would say 30 kits or so, which is fine for me. I never ever wanted them to be lots of kits there. I'm not much of a collector.
Hmm.
I said that, you know, 10 years ago or whatever I was. I started the kit. Started the stupid hobby that we do.
Oh, I'm never going to ever have more kits than I can build. Hmm. I'm never ever going to start another kit when I've still got one half done. I'm never going to have a shelf of doom. I'm way beyond that. I'm never going to ever get to that situation.
It didn't take a couple of years before I got to that situation. Got lax and ended up falling for things and got lots of ideas. That's the problem. I've got lots of ideas. I'm sure other models have the same. Well, lots and lots of ideas, not enough time. But yeah, I have a couple of kits in the stash that I am umming and ahhing about whether to keep them or not. So those will be in my stash or cash bit later on. We'll talk about those three. What about you? What's your... Describe your mustache to me.
I'm the same in that, I would definitely class books as, or reference material as part of the stash because it's all related. In my little hobby room that I have somewhere in the region of 40 to 50 kits, I think. That's a very, very quick, while you were talking, look around and go, oh my God, really? Is that many? I've got, five, in fact, plastic boxes, which are full of extras, diorama stuff and all that sort of goodness. And like I've said many times before, I'm very fortunate. I've got it's a fairly small room. It's quite amazing what you can cram into a small space. So yeah, I've got quite a lot, and in the loft is where I store mine, which again isn't the best place as such, but we'll talk about places in a little bit. I would suggest that I may have as many There's maybe 100 upstairs.
Wow.
But I've not counted them, and I would probably shiver if I did. But I know for a fact there are some kits up there that I have bought on a whim, of which couple I'm going to talk about today. I have promised myself that I am actually going to try at some point and be hard and go up there and literally label everything that I really, 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 really want to keep, and everything else has got to go.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started with this hobby room and the space to do it, I bought stashes from people, and they weren't necessarily the things I wanted. Let's put it that way. So
have you kept them?
I've kept them. I've kept some of them. I did dispose of some stuff. I have got a reasonable amount of 172nd stuff that I'm not going to build. I know I'm not going to build, although I should do, really, because it will take up less room.
Sell them off.
Yeah, they need to go. That I have got most models that I want. I've got a couple of duplicates. Not many, but I have got a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly haven't got 16 Phantoms or anything like that.
What? How do you end up with duplicates?
Because when you go to a model show and you start seeing the honey, you want some, don't you? So I've picked up a couple here and there that are duplicates. So
are they accidental purchases then?
Well, no, I purposely meant to buy them, but I purposely didn't remember whether I got them or not.
So they're kind of like double more important because you already had it, but you forgot you had it.
And yeah.
You still wanted it. So, yeah.
This is the problem, and this is one of the things in which we should. There are different ways in which you can do this, which we'll cover in a second. But what you should really do is make a list of what you've got and keep it in a format in which you can refer to in those moments where you're sat in the honeypot looking at all the lovely kits thinking, I really want that.
Well, that's what ScaleMates is for.
There we go. ScaleMates is a brilliant, brilliant way of keeping track of your stash.
Yep.
In, funny enough, the stash section. one of the reasons I brought this up was because, hey, it's a really great thing to do because you can have it on, you can immediately look on your phone while you're standing there and quickly scan through to see whether you really do need that kit you're looking at. Mm-hmm. Precursors to that, I will warn you that the last model show I was at, I had the opportunity to walk around when no one else was around and saw three kits that I liked, one of which I really wanted to get, which would have been a duplicate. I've already built the kit. But it was such a brilliant kit. I loved it. Mm. And that was the 148th Dauntless from Accurate Miniatures, I think it was. Uh-huh. And it was such a lovely kit. I really, really enjoyed doing it. The stall was literally opposite from where I was. And I sat there and I was umming and ahhing. And I eventually said to Steph, I don't know what to do. I really want to get it, but I'm not sure I should.
Steph is the friend you were with, yeah?
Sorry, yes, Steph Knightley. Yeah, we were at a show together.
If he's listening, you go nuts. That's not his name.
I know. I did it on purpose.
We'll find out if he listens.
Yeah, let's. And I am denied for so long that eventually, when I went to go and buy it, I walked past the store and thought, I'll just go and powder my nose. And when I came back, there was a gentleman standing there buying the kit.
Yeah.
So I lost out, but.
So is this a kit that you already had?
It's a kit I've built.
Cool. Well, that's not doubling up. That's fine.
I had convinced myself the best thing to do was to buy the kit, yeah, and then build them. So that meant I had four, which means I could do a diorama of a carrier top with four Dauntlesses sat on it.
That's awesome.
And that would have been awesome. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. Anyway, we digress.
So, yeah, we were talking about doubling up. So maybe I don't have enough kits, but I can't see myself ever buying a kit going,
oh, that's a really good one. Oh, wow, I've already got it.
For me, they're quite expensive things. But buying it because you forgot you had it, I can't imagine myself doing that.
It does happen. It does happen. And ScaleMates has stopped me from doing that a couple of times. Mm. When I've seen something that I liked the subject and thought, oh, yeah, I really would like to get that.
You've got it.
The only time that I have actually bought on purpose duplicates,
uh-huh,
was the B-17 and the Lancaster in 148th.
Yeah.
I have two of each of those.
Right.
And they're by different manufacturers. And I did it on purpose because I wanted to do a comparison video of an old, for example, the B-17, an old monogram, mm-hmm, kit, and the new Hong Kong models kit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed doing that. That was quite something I enjoyed doing. So, yeah, okay. Other than that.
That makes sense. I've got two 148 Red Aeros kits, Italeri ones. Italeri. 148 Red Aeros special editions. And there, so there's a reason I have two. Not because I forgot. because I want to do a diorama one day that involves opening up all the panels that I can on top of a Red Arrow Hawk. So to do that, I need two kits, one to cut the panel out to have the panel, and then one to actually have the hole so I can have extra bits and pieces hanging around inside this diorama. It's going to be a hanger diorama. Gotcha. So if I wanted to have an extra rudder sitting next to one that's on the aircraft, then I need to have two kits. Yes. So that's why I've got two. And I only remembered that I've got that because I went out to the garage to have a look at the statues for this show. And then I went, oh, yeah, I have the Red Arrows. And also I have a 132nd Hawk as well out there.
Ooh.
Because I was going to do the diorama in 132nd. But I found that there are better and more accessories in 148 for what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I'm going to stick with 148. Plus, it's going to take up less space. One of the things I would find interesting to talk to you about today, about stashes, was while I was out there, I was thinking, oh, I didn't buy that. That was bought for me by somebody who wanted me to build that. I can't get rid of that then. You know, so it's got to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, how acceptable is it to sell a kit that was purchased for you when you aren't going to have the mojo to build it? Do you think it's okay to do? What do you think?
The short answer is yes.
Okay.
Because that model's been bought for you. You know it will bring you joy, happiness. If it's a subject matter in which is not going to float your boat or give you that feeling that we all crave when we make models, I think most people that have bought you the gift would be understanding.
Okay.
And this is where, in a way, that the swap idea is a really cool idea, because you could swap it with something that you want. So it's not a cash incentive. It's a case of, I've got this kit. I'm giving it to this person because they really love the subject. I don't. But I'm taking this off him because I really love that subject and they don't.
Okay. So you're kind of keeping the spirit of the gift alive.
Yes.
It's just not the actual physical plastic.
Yeah, I think the only problem comes where you sell a kit and then go off and buy yourself something completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
You go and treat yourself to a holiday somewhere or...
it's a hell of a kit.
Well, yeah. It's a win that wins kit. Yeah. No, I don't personally have an issue with that. I mean, even to the point where I've got kits which I've bought from people and they've sold it to me cheap.
Yeah.
And at the time, I bought them and gone, oh, yeah, I really want to do that. And now I look at them and go, I don't know why that enthused me at the time. And it's not something I want to build now. So in that case, I've actually contacted the people I bought them from and said, look, I've had a thought about it. I've got this kit. It's in the stash, but I really don't think I'm going to build it. Are you okay, A, for me to sell it, and B, if I make more money than what I purchased it for, would you like to split the difference?
Huh, right. Very honest of you.
In each occasion, the people have said, no, I sold that to you for what I thought was a fair price at the time. That's fine. Do what you want with it.
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I think that's mainly down to the fact that I've been open about it and said, look, you know, I feel a little bit guilty.
Yeah, yeah. We mentioned at the beginning, didn't we, that the kits kind of keep their value. As we also said at the beginning, that kits can go up in value as well. As long as you keep it nice, don't start the kit. If you start that kit, you've destroyed the resale value of that kit. Just don't glue the stuff. It's not too bad taking it off the sprue, as long as you do it well. But yeah, just don't put any glue or paint on it and try and sell it off as a kit.
Yeah,
bad idea. Bad idea. But yeah, definitely. It's like gold. You know, the price of gold goes up and down. You can invest in plastic.
And we've got a good example of that with Wing That Wings. You know, the kit sold for a good amount of money. And obviously, as soon as it was announced they were no longer, there was a flood of Wing That Wing kits being sold at incredible money.
It still is.
That's not often happens, in fairness.
No.
I suppose it's on the choices which you make.
I remember when the Bandai Attack came out first, when it first came out, and I wanted it because I want to build a diorama of Ray's house. And it came out and it was £85. And I just could not for the life of me warrant spending that much money on what is essentially a reasonably small kit, because it's only 144 scale. So I was, no, I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to wait until the price came down. And the price came down to 50, you know, about a month later after it came out. And then it went down a little bit more. And then I saw it at a model show 6 months later for 45. And I thought, I'm going to buy it now. So because 45, I'm happy with that. So yeah, I bought it for 45 quid. And that's pretty much where the price has stayed around there. I've seen it 42. I've seen it, I got up to 48. Yeah, just slightly more than half of the price it came out as. I was going to say, if your kit comes out you want, just wait 6 months, maybe even less, and that value of that kit will drop.
You know, the new releases come out, and you're like, oh, I got to have that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Bar Wingnut Wings, I can't think of many other kits that haven't had that scenario.
Yeah, yeah. But then you're not buying it to invest, are we? We're not collecting them. Well, I'm not, certainly. I'm buying them because I want to build them someday.
Some people like collecting models, like stamps.
Die-cast stuff, you know, Corgi. Remember when we were down at Airfix and we were talking about collectibles?
Yeah.
You know, the manufacturers of these things are not stupid. They make things that are collectible for, you know, that particular time, particular television series or whatever is coming out, and you're just buying it to own it.
Yeah.
Which is obviously what you buy things for, is you own them. But it's literally just that, isn't it? You're just collecting it to put it next to the other one that you've got or similar one.
There was a picture of someone that collected Corgi or Dinky toys. And had a lovely display cabinet full of them. Unfortunately, the five-year-old son that he had decided he wanted to play with them. So he came home one day to discover them all unwrapped and lined up on the floor where he'd been playing with them. So, yeah, put a lock on your display cabinet.
Talked about this before. I had a family friend that had a load of the Walker's Crisps fans all lined up on the shelf. That was torturous, absolutely torturous. My mum collected Beanie Babies 15, 20 years ago. In the house, they have a dining room. Every single part of the wall is covered in Beanie Babies in boxes.
Yeah.
You go in there and you feel like you're being stared out from every single angle, because you literally are being stared at. And there's some rare ones in there that were quite expensive when they came out, because the company knew that people would pay for sort of high prices. What they're worth now, I don't know. I imagine nothing.
Well, no, if they're rare, they're probably worth something.
Yeah, but it's not like people talking about Beanie Babies all the time.
They're in the box. That's the key. If the box is sealed, leave it sealed. If you're collecting them, leave it sealed. Don't touch it.
Oh, yeah, they're all in the boxes. They all got their tags. They've got tag protectors on them to stop the tag.
Yeah. Wow.
Bending or being affected by the environment. I mean, they look very pretty. They're great wallpaper. Let's see who they get left to in the world for me and my sister get it.
You'll fight over Beanie Babies. So in your stash.
Yes.
Now, there's a reason I'm asking this question, but your stash is in the garage and you said you've got an overflow stash.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that relatively regularly move things around within your garage stroke overflow? So do you swap things out? Your overflow is your overflow.
I don't know. The original idea was that my space in the garage, that was going to have where my kits were. And that has grown and grown. And now they're on top of that cupboard. And now they're inside the other cupboard. Mm-hmm. And now they're indoors as well. So no, I don't rotate them at all. No. In fact, the last time I'd gone through my stash was quite a while ago. So it was nice going out there and have a look and see what I've got. Why do you ask?
I ask because in the room I'm in, I have probably moved stuff around maybe as often as every 6 months, mainly because I've bought more and haven't got anywhere to store them in this hobby room.
Move them around as in to keep them tip-top condition or just some reorganize them, do you mean?
It's about what's floating my boat at this particular moment. I bought a B25. Lovely kit. It was on my shelf in here for probably well over a year. And then I maneuvered things around the beginning of this year and thought, no, I don't want it in here anymore. It's got to go upstairs in the stash.
Right.
Because my plans of what I wanted to build have changed. I've had another brainwave and or whatever. So yeah, I do move them around. I don't often relocate from the main stash into the hobby room unless there's a specific project in which I've gone, no, I really want to do that.
Okay. So it's quite a one-way system, is it?
Yeah, it can be.
Mm.
And the downside to that, and this is part of the reason why I was saying I really need to think about 100% what I want to build, because the downside to that is there are things in which I have bought and gone, oh, that's a cracking idea. I could do this, I could do that, blah, blah. And then I've fallen out of love with that idea, and the model's been moved into the main stash.
Yeah.
And other things have come along which have a higher priority. And I've resisted going, oh, I don't want that kit anymore. I can get rid of it. I'll put it upstairs for safekeeping and I'll come back to that. And I realized that potentially, like I said, there's certainly some kits in which I could swap out and other things in which I want, or they're just things in which I'm not going to do. Like, for example, the 172nd kits generally, although there's a couple of subjects that are quite interesting, I'm probably not going to do them.
I think that's it, isn't it, though? Because we change, like you said, I do too. I go from one thing to another, you know, like I insert something that goes from one thing to another a lot. Just like that. So for me to kind of say, oh, yeah, I'm definitely not going to need that anymore, and off I go and sell it, makes me think, well, hang on, now I'm probably going to switch my mind around again. And then go, oh, I wish I didn't sell it, and I'll go and buy it. It just feels so strange, kind of pointless selling them because you can get them back. And obviously, you can pretty much buy any kit that you want. You can pretty much go out and buy anything you want from eBay or Amazon and everything else. You know, secondhand traders.
They're not something that's going to go out of production.
Yeah. And let that then store them for you.
No, Tamiya is a good example. Some of the kits are 70s, and they're still coming out in the shop in brand new boxes. Do I need to buy that kit? And that's sort of the thing in which I'm in my head, I'm thinking, is that I've bought that kit because I really like it, but the reality is I could still probably buy it in 20 years' time new.
Yeah, and it's still knocking about. Yeah.
Or secondhand.
Yeah, too right.
And my biggest fear is something drastic happened to my home and I lost them through flood, fire, or whatever. That would be horrific, totally horrific for me.
Uh-huh. You'd be getting back though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And also, I was thinking actually while I was writing the intro to this episode, going to your stash and being inspired. Maybe it's something that's happened to us in our journey, in our shopping habits, etc. But didn't you used to be inspired in model shops?
Oh, I still am. Model shows too.
Well, I am as well. So again, do I need a stash? Because the reality is I spend more time looking in model shows at model kits than I do looking at my own stash.
Nobody needs a stash, do they? You don't need one.
No. No, but it's nice to have one.
Well, they did. Do you think people buy stuff just to build their stash up? Or do you think it's just it just happens?
I think majority of the time, I think it just happens. I'm thinking of at least half a dozen people I know who have got reasonably large stashes and they're stuffed away in all sorts of nooks and crannies. And one particular person I can think of was a guy I work with. He had model kits in his home that he squirreled away but didn't really look at and didn't do an awful lot of model making. When I took him to Telford, his passion was reignited, to which he then started looking in the nooks and crannies and went, oh, do you know, I didn't know I got that. And that's partly how the group build started, was the fact that I was like, oh, I want to do this group build. And it's like, oh, I don't know if I've got anything that will fit into that. So he'd go off and have a look in his squirrel holes.
Yeah.
And go, do you know what? I've got three kits in which I could do.
That's why group builds are so good, aren't they? Because there's always, you can find something that you've got that will fit. But then does that kind of throw you off your plan of what you want to build with your stashes? Well, I guess it doesn't matter, does it?
You know, well, I'm always, I think I've alluded. I've alluded to that. You know, the I can think of at least the last 3 years, at least a couple of times where I've made a plan for the year.
Yeah.
And I've gone off and bought other bits and pieces and gone, well, no, I don't want to do that now. I'm going to do this. And certainly what's coming to me this year, there are at least half a dozen projects in which I really want to do, which are going to knock back the other ones that I really want to do. Part of what I'm saying is that I want to focus a little bit more.
Okay.
I seem to be lost in my stash. Anyway, talking about stashes, what are your choices? Let's do that.
Insert stash or cash jingle here.
After this episode, we're not going to talk about it because I'll give you a bit of time to interact with us, and then we'll catch up with it after that.
Yeah, so, right. I have the Revel Saab AJ 37 Vigan.
Uh-huh.
And this is in 1/48 scale. I bought this for cheap. Uh-huh. A chap had passed away who was a member of our local model club. They had a lot of kits, and the club I was with were charged with selling them on, making some money for his chosen charity. They were all brought into the club. People were looking through them and choosing the things and uh-huh. deciding what they wanted to build and all that kind of thing. I didn't have any cash on me at the time. One of the things that was left was this Vigan. And I thought, oh, yeah, actually, wouldn't it be nice if I did build one? Because they're quite cool looking. And there's Delta Wing thing. It's awesome. Really iconic. So I said to the guy who's kind of running the sale, I said, I'll put some money in for that Vigan. I didn't buy it for much. And then he said, that kit is all raised panel lines. And so that's exactly when I found out it was all raised panel lines.
Oh, right.
So pulling the kit out now, this is one of the reasons I haven't touched it. I'll show you. All the panel lines across here are all raised up. It's like Braille. Now, I've never built a model kit that had raised panel lines, so I don't know what it's like. But I don't hear good things. So I haven't touched it. I haven't put it together. It comes with a couple of resiny bits. It comes with a couple of conversion for the canopy. But yeah, I'm not sure whether I'm going to build it. I'm not sure whether I have the interest in building it. And so that is my first one that I submit up to stash or cash.
Now, it's interesting you say about raised panel lines, because I did a comparison, like I said earlier, about the B17 yeah. monogram kit and the Hong Kong mm-hmm. models version. And I made a big deal about the fact that it was raised panel lines. I didn't poo-poo it, but I did say, you know, raised panel lines is not what us modern modelers appreciate, la, 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 la. And I'll be honest, I can't remember the name of the person, but I had a very, and bear in mind, I did that comparison some time ago now, so several years ago, and it still gets views and still gets comments.
Okay.
6 months ago, I got a comment from a gentleman who said, I don't understand why everyone bangs on about raised panel lines.
Hmm.
The whole purpose of raised panel lines was to make sure you had the line of which a skilled modeler can sand back to get the correct line, because you don't have grooves on aircraft.
Right.
I was completely ignorant of this fact. And I actually, this is strange, but the monogram kit was something in which I bought specifically to do the comparison. And then my idea was to sell it on. I wasn't going to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel obliged almost to build both as a comparison, but build both and do sand back the panel lines to make them right.
Hmm. Okay.
And it was designed that way on purpose.
Huh.
This is what I was told. Whether this is a factual, accurate moment, I don't know, but I'll take it as read and I'll take it as true. So my question to you, before passing judgment, if you like, is that have you lost interest in the plane? Or is it the fact of the raised panel lines?
It's the fact that it's got raised panel lines.
Hmm.
That's the issue. And that's why I haven't touched it. Now, I hear what you're saying about, you know, you sand them back. But I just took a photograph of it for the listeners. And the bottom of it is, if you know the vegan, there's like 12 round panels underneath. And rescribing that or sanding it back to even a smooth finish would be a task to make it look as, you know.
Yeah.
All sanded back exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To have an even.
It would be better to leave them and then just dry brush so that they look like shadows rather than something that was raised. So maybe I should have a go at it because of that, you know, because I haven't done one. And if I build one, then I can say,
yeah,
I should have sold it.
I'm going to go with a cash it.
Right.
Because hearing what you're saying, my advice would be cash it or swap it.
Hmm.
Mm.
Cash it or swap it. All right. I will take your advice and I will do just that. So it will go, what should I do? Should I put it on eBay or?
Well.
How will I cash it, dear Liza?
There are lots of different ways. eBay is an option. Of course, is Facebook groups. There are Facebook groups in there which are literally buy or sell or swap. There's numerous ones out there.
I will do that. I will eBay it and I'll let you know why I'm. That was good, actually, because now I can go, well, James told me to get rid of that.
That's yes, great. James's fault.
Well, let us know what you would have done. And if you want to keep it, then go and buy it. It'll be on eBay, surely.
That's right, yeah. Put the link in the chat for you. So the first one I've picked up is this, and I'm showing it on the camera to Malcolm. So this is the Airfix Club Limited Edition 172nd North American F86F. Sabre with a MiG 15.
Okay, yeah.
So two kits in there, as it suggests, it is a limited edition. You open the box up, and it has the Airfix kits all in their bags.
Yeah.
Instructions, etc. Everything's there. The reason I got this was because I liked the box art.
Oh.
It's as simple as that. The thought of having a MiG and a Sabre together, for obvious reasons, yeah, just made me go, oh, I like that. I'll have that. And it's a limited edition, remember. Limited edition.
So did it come out with the club, or is it a purchase that you brought that was somebody was in the club and then sold it and you bought it, or did you buy it because you remember the club or the Airfix Club? Or
so I joined Airfix Club, and I didn't buy this. This was actually something that was given to me because someone said they wouldn't build it.
Oh, it's a gift.
Yes.
Does the person who gifted this to you listen to this podcast?
Yes, they do.
Shit.
This is something in which I have been faltering over for some time, and the main reason is the scale.
Yeah.
172nd. If it was 148th, I think it would stay in the stash, and I would be more than happy to do it at some stage.
Yeah,
because I have ideas for it, and yes, they would be fighting each other and blah blah blah, but 172nd,
Well, there's two of them, so you can double that 172nd up and probably be the size of a 132nd kit.
I could glue them together and make them a cyber MiG, but it's not it doesn't float my boat anymore, unfortunately.
Okay, well, I can give you my opinion.
Go on.
So you said that you'd liked it because of the box art.
Yeah.
Is it because, but you didn't buy it?
Basically, I did a swap, I think.
I see. Personally, I think that box art is abhorrent.
Oh.
I loathe that scheme that is on the MiG.
Oh.
Loathe. Like, I don't even want to look at it. The sabers, the standard sort of saber, no problem with that. But I find the camo on that offensive on that MiG. Because it's just ugh. So just because of that, I would say to cash it, get rid of it. Was it the MiG colors that turned you on when you saw that kit, or was it the saber?
I just quite like how they look.
Oh.
I've not done any research on MiG, so I have no idea about the camo. I think if I did build it, I probably would look to see what options there were.
Are there options in the kit?
No, this is what it is. In the kit is what it is. But I am that sort of person anyway. I'm somebody that will buy a kit and go, I like that. It's a very nice picture, but I'm not doing it like that.
No, I wouldn't do it like that in a million years.
I do. I actually quite like it. It's a fairly simple camo, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm assuming that's all hand painted. There's no decal for that.
No, there's no decal for that. No,
it looks like a green zebra.
Green background with lots of worms over it.
Yeah, yeah.
Toontone worms
or straw.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, I'm gonna put it in the sale side then. Let's
get out of my sight.
I feel relieved.
I thought you were gonna dig your heels in and say no, no. I love it now. I love it so much.
It's one of those, you look at it, it is a little bit like Marmite, I can't lie. And like I say, if it was 148, I probably would have dug my heels in, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. Are you going to eBay that, or are you going to face bay it? Or
do you know what? I think what I might do is I might try and put it onto a swap site and see if anyone's A, interested, and B, what they're willing to swap with. My only fear is it is 172nd, so to try and get a 148 for a 172nd, I might have to put something with it, I reckon.
Right.
Which I'm happy to do. That's not a problem. Yeah, it'll need some enticing. Actually, do you know what? I know somebody that loves 172nd. They might be interested. Well, we'll see. Anyway, my next offering is this kit here. This is the 148 USAF B25D Pacific Theatre from Academy.
Okay.
This is a relatively new kit. I can't remember off the top of my head when it came out, but I think I've had it for a couple of years, maybe. It's a lovely kit. There's nothing wrong with it at all. It is a lovely kit. But I just think I may have fallen out of love with it.
It's a very big kit, isn't it? It's a 148. Those rudders are going to be quite high off the ground, especially if you do it on its wheels.
I'm just looking to see whether it's still sealed or not. It's not. I didn't think so.
No.
But let's have a little looky-loo inside.
The artwork, the livery, or the decals it comes with, looks really interesting with that parrot on the front.
Yes, yeah. And that is one of the things that drew me to it to start with, was the nose art. It does look pretty cool.
I've never seen that before.
We look inside, and obviously it's all still in its packets, etc., etc. Down there, right at the bottom.
It's a beast, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, that's the decals. The parrot has different options.
Yeah, right.
So it's not just what's on the cover. There are a couple of options there. I think there is maybe two or three.
Okay.
There is some masks in there as well for the canopies. And it, you know, it's a...
How big are the wings? Could you pull the wings out?
I'm not just pulling them out. They're falling out. So, yeah, they're the wings. They are... The normal problem, my ruler's too small.
It's how you measure it. That's what matters.
Absolutely. So they're about 8 inches in length on one side.
On one side? How long is it on the underside?
on the other side, the other side is about the same. The fuselage itself is knocking on probably about 25, 26 centimetres, I guess.
Yeah.
So it is quite a big bird. And the panel lines are all perfect. The riveting's lovely. I honestly can't say anything bad about the kit. The kit's lovely.
Academy kit, good pedigree. And I think the box art looks quite fun, certainly. What's the aircraft called? It's not Mitchell, is it?
This is a B-25. A B-25, would that be a Mitchell?
See, yeah, I mean, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing that you would build. I'm surprised that you've put that up.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I'm just looking on the box because I don't remember the box did actually say how big it was. No, it doesn't actually say on the side of the box. Yeah, it's a funky aircraft. It is. It looks funky. It looks lush.
Yeah.
And I've seen them built up, and they do look really good built up, I think. I haven't heard any bad reports about the kit.
Well, put it out to tender, shall we? Find out. If it was me...
Yeah.
I think you should keep that. I think you should put it back in the stash where it was and don't disturb it, because I think it's your scale. Mm-hmm. It's your era. Mm-hmm. It's an aeroplane, and you like aeroplanes, don't you?
I do like aeroplanes.
It's a parrot-y, and you don't have a parrot, but it is very interesting. It's kind of like Angry Birds or something, isn't it, on the front there?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You should keep it.
It's on that pile in my mind as I can get this anytime. I don't have to keep this. That's sort of my thinking on it.
How cool would it be if you did like a treetop diorama that is exactly like the box art here. So you do, the base is just a load of treetops, and you just have it just flying over the top of the treetops. Really, really good.
But you know what I would do, Malcolm, is I would build the whole tree. I wouldn't just do the tops. I wouldn't be able to do that. Hmm. It would be a diorama of trees with a plane on top. Because I don't do simple. Do you know, airplanes are a funny thing with me. I do like to look at airplanes that are static. And we had this conversation before in another podcast. Flying is always something that's I find a bit weird. I have done a Spitfire that's flying into a picture.
Yeah.
And I got the funky extras for the propellers. So it's, you haven't got the ring of round plastic with the painting effect. You've got like a physical bit of PE, mm-hmm. your propeller moving, the idea of movement. And I really like that. Okay. And the only other one that I've not had static per se was a Huey hanging in a tree, but it's still static. I don't know.
Keep it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, well, I'm gonna put it in the keep it file then.
Well, yeah, find out what the people say.
Let's see your votes. I will put the poll up.
Put a picture up. See what people say, and then do what the people say.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, my next one is reach right over. And let me send you an image on Messenger so that you can look at it while we talk.
Cool.
There it is. Just arrived. So it comes with a picture and a little story. I went to Duxford Air Museum in the UK. And in there, they have lots of airplanes and things like that. But they also have a place where they are restoring the aircraft. I can't remember off the top of my head now what that hangar is called. Is it the Duxford Restoration Company or something?
Oh,
something company. I'm sure it is. I don't know. We should look it up.
But I know it has changed actually.
Ah, okay.
So
in there, they have what I've shown you, a picture that is from Duxford. They have a Fairey Firefly, the Mark 1, and it is painted yellow or orange, like a training colour yellow. Mm-hmm. Now, this particular aircraft was used in Sweden, and it was, went wrong, or it broke, or something, or they just didn't want to fly it anymore, and it became a target for quite a while, sat out in the rain, and it was just a target to shoot at, and that's why it was painted bright yellow. Me being a lover of textures and colors and things, when you go up really, really close to this thing, there are four or five different shades of orange and yellow that they've used to paint.
Mm-hmm.
Different levels of paint are coming off at different times. It's a dirty, unlooked after, oil covered orange aircraft with no wings, because the wings have been removed. They do have the wings in the hangar. And that took my imagination. I thought I could paint that. That would look really cool. It's just as it is now, got me thinking that maybe I should build my own. So I went out and I looked for quite a while trying to find my own Fairey Firefly in a Mark 1, which I finally found. I think I found it. I was at the Abingdon model show and they had a Fairey Firefly. And I remember thinking, I don't have the money for that, but I'm buying it anyway. I did. So I've got it. It's it's in a 1/48 scale.
Yep.
So it's a reasonably good size.
Mm-hmm.
It has quite a long fuselage because, as you can see, it's got a kind of extra section for the co-pilot to sit in. Don't know why he's there. Doesn't seem to have an access to weapons. Maybe he's
I think he was a navigator and radio operator, wasn't it?
Oh, I see. Right.
Possibly.
Yeah, it does have a very kind of very long antenna across the top. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I don't know much about the airplane. All I know about is that it looks really cool in orange. Mm. So that was my plan back in 2017. So quite a few years ago, 5 years ago, and I still haven't built it. I still haven't done it. But I love the picture. Just bringing it up again just to show you reminded me of how much I really like it. I really like the idea of making something really, really weathered in that color.
Mm.
Now, if you search the internet for other pictures, you'll probably find ones that are, you know, closer. You'll be able to see the different textures and things like that. In fact, I'll probably just do that now.
So what was the actual kit that you got?
Sorry, yes. This is a special hobby 148 Fairy Firefly Mark 1.
Mm-hmm.
So they're restoring it currently. I just wanted to build it as it looked in this kind of yellowy-orange, mucky kind of way. I thought it was quite interesting because like, the whole rudder is kind of almost destroyed. There's bullet holes in it. There's weathering opportunities.
So much going on in that picture.
Well, let me show you another one. It's even closer. So not only is the yellow interesting, the natural metal finish parts that they've got on there, those are also got different colors and yellows and stuff on them too. Let me show you that picture as well. You see they've got like covers on the exhaust. They've got like a big tarpaulin over the top. It's just a mess.
Yeah.
You can see in that picture I just sent you lots of different shades of yellow on different panels.
Yeah.
There's a bit of chipping here and there, but the chipping is yellow. There's a couple of bullet holes in it.
Yeah, even the damage to the propeller as well.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, there is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so now there'll be a bit of work to do because obviously I'll have to remove the rudder parts, squash down the back a bit because it's a bit buckled where the rear wheel is. I'll have to scratch build where the wings have been removed and add that to the kit. But, what do you think? I'll leave it.
Well, I know for a fact that the listeners are going to look at that picture and go, no, keep it. You've got to do that. That's got your name written all over it. Definitely. Special Hobbies, funnily enough, I've actually got a similar kit of the same aircraft.
Oh, well, the Firefly.
They can be a bit tricky, those particular kits, I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
Never built one myself, but 100% you have got to keep that. I want to see you do the tarpaulin on the cockpit. I want to see you do the discoloration because I know you can really do that. You do an amazing job on that. But more so, I want to see how you get that effect on the exhausts because it looks like someone's been throwing toilet paper at it.
It looks like it's wrapped with toilet paper and badly, doesn't it? I don't know. Is it like PTFE tape or something? I don't know what that is.
I don't know. Either that or it's icicles. Someone's been trying out their icicle methods on a real plane.
I don't know.
Sam, you must build that. You must. And also, the other thing in which not only, I think, would that particular choice would really be down your street, so to speak, but there's a little bit of extra detail in which you've got to throw at it to achieve that's not within the kit, which I think you'd really enjoy doing. So the ends of the wings and the broken tail. There's sort of things in which I think you would thrive on.
Mm.
So that's a definite keeper from me.
Okay. Put it out to the folks, eh? That's going to take some photographs of it while we're talking about it. Cool. All right. I will keep it for now, see what they say.
My only worry is whether you've got sufficient paint because the colors are just enormously varied.
What I probably would do is base color it in yellow and then just use lots of different oranges and light reds and sort of fleshy yellows, elf yellows to sort of bring it out.
Just washes, isn't it, really? Just layer upon layer of different washes.
Yeah, I can see at least two different types of yellow on there.
There's four.
Four, yeah, maybe. And a lot of the writing on the side, the decals and stuff would worn down, so yes. All right, I'll put it back.
Definitely. So your last choice.
Yes. Mine all seem to have a theme. Like, I bought this with good intention.
Uh-huh.
Right, so I need to send you these pictures so that you can understand why this particular kit was purchased in the first place. It's going to be three pictures. So these are photographs of an abandoned MiG-21. The pictures I have of it are in different stages of abandonment.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically an abandoned MiG that was found in Belgium, someone's back garden. I think it's on YouTube, actually. Some guys have videoed it, walked all over it and sat in the cockpit and took video of it. And it was just completely it's no way this is going to ever fly again. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting looking subject because it had so much weathering potential.
Mm-hmm.
So not to go by halves, I went out and purchased a 1/32 scale MiG 21 by Ravel. Now, it's a big kit. It's a beast. It's an absolute beast. And it's an old kit, too. The paper's yellow, you know? It smells like it's been dug up, you know, a billion years ago.
Yeah.
And it's got raised panel lines, funnily enough. But the idea was that I was going to build the kit up, not brilliantly, because it's going to be abandoned, and just go to town with the weathering, yeah, like from tip to toe. And maybe not even follow the photographs exactly, because it goes through stages of abandonment. You know, there's different rust patterns and things depending on what year it was photographed and, yeah, and that kind of thing. And the kit, you know, seems to be reasonable. I haven't made any attempt at putting any of it together, but I've kind of kept that back. The decals are nice. They're still in good nick. But if I show you the size of the cockpit, that'll give you an idea how big this thing will be. It's a long aircraft, right? So
oh, wow,
that is without the tail. Oops. That's without the tail and without the pointy nose cone bit. So it's going to be really big.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously I wanted to, you know, to do all the streaks and all the weathering and all the rust and everything else. And I have a feeling that you're going to say the same thing as you did about the Firefly.
The problem with this is that you've applied three pictures. And I'll be honest, I'm looking at these pictures and I'm thinking to myself, oh, wow, three models, that's going to be amazing. So I'm semi-disappointed that you just want to do one. However, with that said...
Three pictures of the same item.
And how you delivered the pictures to me told me the story as to what you thought. Because I'll try and describe the picture. So the first picture is of this aircraft looking very mossy, dirty, grimy, surrounded by trees and young trees, to be honest. Almost, I would say, an autumn sort of scene, maybe, and looking very, very sad, if I'm honest. The second picture is obviously during the summer, because everything's very green. There's suddenly lots of ferns everywhere, and it's still looking grubby. It's got a tree that's in full bloom that's hanging on the...
Yeah.
Or sitting on top of the cockpit there, and the nose is attached, and that's an awesome diorama just there, right there. But then you held back the last picture, and I totally understand why you did it, because this is really more of what you want to do. So this aircraft is now in full decay, so there's bits missing, the panels are missing, the nose cone's missing.
And gone.
The cockpit is now open, and disappeared.
The big long pointy thing is gone.
It's graffitied, and it's you all over. Sorry, yeah, this is something definitely you got to do. The raised panel lines. I think actually, I'm gonna really throw the cat amongst the pigeons. I would tell you now to get rid of the Viggen. Don't worry about the raised panel lines scenario that I was thinking in my head at the time. Get rid of that. Keep this. And explore the joy of sanding down your panel lines, because let's face it, if you lose a little bit of detail in your sanding and it's not quite even all over, it's not going to matter in this particular picture.
I wouldn't bother painting underneath, would I?
To be honest, it's in true fashion of not painting underneath, because you could just put loads of ferns and stuff underneath it. So,
yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. But again, in the whole story of the thing, the missing panel lines, etc., that'd be a bit of scratch building you'd have to do, and a little bit more research. And I think, to be honest, I think you'd get as much kick out of doing that as you would out of your saloon that you did.
Yeah, I did enjoy doing that.
Yeah, 100%. That's 100% keeper. 100%.
Okay. It also comes with an engine as well inside. So I could leave the engine in and have that still being shown. But I imagine the engine's been taken out. I have to go in and see what...
Yeah, possibly. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got three great reference pictures there, of which you can take bits out of each of those pictures to a point and just explore it. And leaving the engine in, actually... would be pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, you can even see the typical MiG cockpit colour still is in there. God knows what the inside of that cockpit is like now, with all the water and wind and trees and everything else that's been in there and possibly used as a nest by some sort of raccoon or crow.
If you ever wanted to know where bears take a dump in the woods.
Okay, I'll keep hold of it then.
I'm going to have to nag you to get that done. So I think, to be honest, we may have started a bit of a theme, because the next one, I think I already know what you're going to say to me. This box is huge. It's a 135th kit. It is from Hobby Boss. The length of it is 570 millimeters. The width is 94. And this is the kit. The Soviet MBV-2 gun. And this is a tank on rails, basically.
Where did you get that from?
This was a whim purchase, 100%. I saw it, loved it, thought I want it, and I did. It comes with PE. It's not a great deal, but there is a little bit of PE in there. Mm-hmm. It builds up. I'm busy tearing the box here. I will take pictures of all this. On the back there, it explains what the... Some CAD drawings of what's the guns look like, etc.
That does look very otherworldly.
It looks weird, right? Really, really weird.
Mm.
So this is the profile.
Yeah.
The front.
Mm-hmm.
The profile of the back. Like, super weird.
Yeah. So have you seen the film or read the book Snowpiercer?
Yes, I have.
Kind of reminds me of that kind of...
It sort of does, right? I have a German... BR-52 locomotive, at 135th. You know, I had a train moment, basically. I became a bit of a spotter. I thought the two could go well in a diorama somehow. This is another purchase I made. It wasn't an awful lot of money, if I'm honest, from what I remember. So it was a good deal. It was bought brand new. It's been opened to have a look at the plastic. There are no decals with it at all because it's painted basically white.
Weird. Looking thing. Does it come with figures?
No. It comes with track.
Okay. Does why does it have an open window at the front?
So on the box, yeah, really bizarrely, it's an open window. And what it is you can just peer inside and see the plastic of the train, 10 centimeters from one end, but it basically gave you a section of the train that you could look at to see what it would look like.
Does it have interior?
No, there's no interior. It has three main guns, and then it has machine gun posts and a funky, I seem to remember, this device here, which looks like four machine guns, which I assume would be to take out any aircraft or a defense against aircraft.
Take anything out, wouldn't it? That thing.
But it's inside the tank, so it seems really weird. So whether it pops up, I don't know.
Well, it must do. Look at the picture on the right-hand side. Look, it comes up and is then operated by somebody.
Yeah.
Odd, though.
Hide it and then bring it out when they need it. I brought it down from the loft, specifically when we recorded this episode, and I very confidently brought it out of the loft. The more I handle it, the more I'm like, I don't know.
Hmm. The potential for weathering is high, but I wager there's not much detail on this. I think it's just big, old, massive panels.
What I'll do is I will take out of the box what you're peering at through the little window.
And that would do it for me. So if it's got lots of detail, so panels and rivets and bits and bobs on the walls of this tank train, then I would say keep it and explore that. It's huge.
It is huge, yeah. It is still in its wrapper. I've not opened it, but basically it's very flat. They are big panels. They are raised panels, actually, which would be about right because they would be welded steel plates.
Mm, yeah.
So that's fine. There is a couple of doors, but very, and a couple of portholes. That's it. It is. And I'll be honest, when I got it out of the box and I looked at it, these are the bits I looked at. So the two bits you get is the top half and the underneath, which is the bit you don't paint.
Yeah, of course.
I pulled it out and looked at it, and I was very uninspired by it.
It looks like a Lancaster or something, doesn't it? It looks like the fuselage of a Lancaster.
Do you know what? The fuselage of a Lancaster is probably not far off. the same length, if I'm honest.
I would say sell it. Cash that in for a few pennies and buy something you really, really want. I don't see... I couldn't imagine that being something I would enjoy looking at on a model show table. It is just a slab of metal, isn't it, this thing?
Yeah.
Hasn't got any kind of nice lines on it. Hasn't got any prettiness to it whatsoever. The only other thing is, does it have any particular history? Does it actually exist?
It's something that did exist. This box here that I'm now showing you, okay, that's part A.
Oh, that's why the box is so big. So why is... Okay, so what's all this stuff then?
So this is all the guns. You've got the track. You've got like a diorama base.
Well, so all the turrets are quite well detailed then.
So the turrets are quite well detailed. You've got bogies, obviously. You need to wipe your nose. And they look quite detailed in themselves.
But the so looking at that picture, you can't see the wheels. They're all covered up.
No, you can't.
It's a train too, so get rid of it. Simple.
This is box B.
Oh, gosh. Box B. You're going to take pictures of all this stuff.
Yeah, I knew I should have opened it. Silly me.
Do you know, there might be someone listening going, oh, Soviet MBV. I've always wanted to build one of those.
This is the turrets. And the turrets are fairly well detailed. But even the turrets are, they're basic Russian turrets. I don't know.
I can't see it being your thing.
It's not a BR-52, without a doubt. For those that don't know, a very large German loco. Detail on that from Trumpeter. Phenomenal. A lot of work in that kit.
Yeah, there's no gantry on this at all. There's no...
No, but it does scream out an awful lot for a diorama.
Does it, though? What would you do?
Well, this is a diorama that you would need to add figures to, and it would be a resupply diorama all day long.
Okay. So, yeah, boxes of ammo crates and
stuff. Yeah, I mean, you could go quite crazy with it. You wouldn't really want to do it on the base they've provided and go, yeah, I've done it.
I guess you've got a lot of fun, a bit like a massive blank canvas to just do all the weathering and chipping you want. Now, I'm definitely going to say, cash it in. Give it to someone that is going to want to build that, has wanted to build one of those for a long, long time, knows all about them, and go and focus on your craft that you're keeping.
Yeah, I got to find a train spot.
I mean, what? Did they? Is that? Are you sure that's a real thing? Because it just seems so ridiculously big.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, it is.
There you go. That's my thing. Put it out to the...
Yeah, let us know what you think of that one. With the choices I made, I purposely made ones that were different, so there's not really a theme to it, which is a little bit like my stash, to be honest, in many ways. But, yeah, there you go.
I found this whole process very, very interesting.
It is, right?
I'm glad we did it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that again. So, if you're listening and you have something in your stash that you are not sure whether you should keep it or get rid of it, so stash or cash, pop it in, send us a picture of it, and let's see what people think. And if it's interesting enough, we might discuss it on the show. Is that right, James?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you have similar stories like Malcolm has displayed with his choices, then add that to it, because then we might understand the rationale of you buying it.
I don't have research for every single case, just those particular ones I have.
No, and absolutely. And you know, don't get me wrong, probably 80% of the kits I've bought, I've done a little bit of research on. I might have saved a picture here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are selected items where I want to go a bit crazy that I've gone crazy on the reference material.
Cool. That was brilliant. Well, I'm going to put that one kit, the vegan, I'm going to put that on eBay, see what happens.
Yes, definitely.
All right.
I'll wait to see what the guys, certainly with the Hobby Boss kit, the tank on rails.
Tank train. The trank.
The trank. I'll wait to see what people say. But the Airfix Club, definitely, that's gone.
Stashes give you the ability to be inspired by looking through your kits. It's almost like a badge of honor as to allow your friend to admire your choices. As long as they don't touch them.
Or maybe it's really closer to a collection for you, like people collect stamps. Model kits don't lose value if stored well and sometimes even bring you a profit. But also, with a little bit of clever moving around, you can swap them for those kits you really need.
Next time, we'll be just making conversation about scratch building. You have been listening to Just Making Conversation with
James Giffins
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photos, updates, and other nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and all of the others.
Let us know what you are just making and what your thoughts are on the conversation in this episode.
Thank you to the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast.
Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark, McCowie, Simon, the Jersey Gent, Steve, Lee, Costa, Mark, Ray, Neil, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Drew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and not forgetting six others.
If you do show your support, leave your name so we can give you a shout out.
Bye.
Goodbye. Just before we do that, I just wanted to say that I had replied to the IPMS Hamilton about the Musaru 4.
Wait a minute. A Musaru update?
Well, I kind of is. Okay, it's a new Musaru. I'm not writing another jingle just for this. I say write, like I wrote to the last one. Yeah, just to let you know, I had replied to that email and I have put myself down for Musaru 4.
Woohoo! It's going to be fun.
I hope it's... Hey, build something inside a pistachio nut. I'll be like, yes, I have the tools.
I haven't challenged IPS Hamilton to this build, have I?
I don't know.
No, I haven't. Well, there you go. It's there. IPS Hamilton, I know you're listening. The whole club has to get their nuts out and play with them.
I think you might have to directly invite them rather than just assume that the club lists.
I am composing the notes of the Musaru Wrangler as we speak.
Dear Musaru Wrangler.
I would like to know whether you have a nut rustler.
It's the joke that just keeps on giving.
Oh, yes.